kind of got to a point, I remember, when I really didn't know if I wanted to do this Christianity thing anymore, and because it wasn't working for me, and I thought I couldn't be good enough to get to Jesus. And what I was taught was that grace became a real thing for me. And I had heard the idea of grace, but grace didn't become beautiful to me until I accepted it, until I really had no other option, until I really wrestled with my depravity and looked for an answer to that. And what I found in the gospel that answered that was particularly beautiful to me. And so it was kind of a mesh of those three things, both me being able to be attentive to things and God really revealing himself to me and certain truths that really provided to be frame shifts for me over the last 4 years of high school.
You are such a breath of fresh air.
Life is God's gift to you. What you do with it is your gift back to God. Well, in a world where challenges are plentiful, it's easy for us to feel discouraged. Yet with enough guidance and support, most people can achieve more in life than they ever dreamed possible. Well, beyond your fears is everything you ever dreamed of. But the Dr. Stem Show will give the voiceless a voice and the hopeless hope. And now, here she is, Dr. Stem.
When will my life not suck? Authentic hope for the disillusioned. I don't know about you, but when I first read this title, of course, eyebrows always turn up like, oh, who would write such a book? But I'm so excited to have a young man, Cameron Presson, who co-authored with his father, Dr. Ramon Presson, this book, which is actually for teenagers. This is the teenage edition. And I tell you, if your eyebrows were raised just hearing the title, When Will My Life Not Suck? Authentic Hope for the Disillusioned, join the club. Because a lot of teenagers, Cameron is a teenager, have this saying, probably they say this on a daily basis, man, my life is just, you know, so bad. And they use the term, my life sucks, you know, all the time. But we have a young man who has embraced a way to cope and deal with his life in a way that probably most teenagers have not embraced. And that's why I'm so excited to have Cameron with us today to talk about his writing of this book and also his faith is what we'll be talking about. Welcome to the show, Cameron.
Wonderful. Thanks for having me.
You know what? I'm gonna just tell you how proud your father is. I'm sure if I had an opportunity to talk to your mother, she's probably just as proud. He was so proud. I mean, he went on to talk about you for probably a good 10 minutes about how proud, I'm telling you.
He's a good guy.
Yes, he's like, Dr. Stem, I can't even tell you how proud I am. And I just want to start this show right before I even introduce you. Let me tell you an incident that I will always remember when I spoke to him. And we didn't record this part because he was talking about how, at first he didn't even trust that you were telling the truth and you were just, you know, another teenager, you know, trying to lie your way out. And there was a time, I don't know if you remember, that, you know, it was lights out and he came back into your room and opened the door. Do you remember that time?
Oh yeah. And oh. I was reading the Bible.
Yes.
he caught me.
He caught you. And I mean, you could hear his voice quivering when he spoke about that moment. And he says, you know, I just stood there and I couldn't believe I saw the light. And I'm like, okay, busted. He's got the light on. And then when I look further, he's reading the Bible.
We still talk about that sometimes. I remember that pretty well. He walked in and sees the lights on. He thinks, okay, I've got him now. I told him to go to bed. And he opens the door and I kind of just looked at him kind of sheepishly and we both just kind of laughed once he saw.
But you know what? That's a story that most parents wish they could talk about and tell about their sons or daughters. So I commend you, applaud you, and congratulate you because guess what? The world now knows your heart. And I'm so glad that we can tell this story of how proud and how different and unique you are as a teenager.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
So yeah, so you know what? Let me just go ahead and tell the audience a little bit about you, or maybe you know what? It'll be so unique. Why don't you tell us about you?
Sure.
And let them know. I think that'll be even better.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Okay.
Okay. So I am the son of two wonderful parents, Raymond, as you know, and then Dory, and my mom works as a career coach at Vanderbilt, and then I have a 21-year-old brother named Trevor. I grew up. I was born in Greenville, South Carolina. We moved to Spring Hill, Tennessee when I was about five. And I grew up here, and I ended up going to college pretty close at Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee. And I'm just finishing up my freshman year. And right now I'm a communication studies major with a minor in Christian leadership and thinking about maybe doing seminary and maybe ministry and still kind of praying that through.
You're already a minister from reading the book and, you know, talking to your dad. I said, boy, he's headed for the ministry, isn't he? And, you know, just like you said, he also said, you know what, we're praying about it. And, you know what, we're just going to have God lead him the right way and where he wants to lead him. So I'm excited for you.
Yeah, I am too. And it's definitely a process, but I know that I've definitely got a few years to kind of figure that out and just trying to pray through whether God's going to use me in a church setting or, you know, in a different way, but trying to figure out what that'll look like. But yeah, it is exciting. It can be scary sometimes, but I try to look at it as more of an exciting opportunity than something scary.
Well, you know what? Talking about that, yes, it could be scary, but then talking about looking and waiting on him using you, right? Let's get back, because you're a freshman in college right now.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes, ma'am.
Let's get back to the 4 years in high school and take a look at how, you know, God was using you in that setting, if you noticed, because then he starts off when we are young to set up our path, and mm-hmm. sometimes we don't get to see it until we are adults, but I work with teenagers a lot, and I remember looking back now at how I started counseling and helping other, you know, kids when I was young, and now I'm a therapist just like your dad, because I do the same work like your dad.
Yeah.
And I started off at that young age. Looking back, you know, at your life as a teenager, do you see any traits, anything that you did that was different and unique, or how you saw your life then?
I think the thing that comes to mind, and I think part of it was modeled really well by my parents. I wanted a meaningful life, and the cool thing is that I know that that was a desire given to me by God, so it wasn't something that I could have conjured up, but for a long time, I had this longing for something more. And I tried to, and it kind of goes that I would try to find it in relationships, or, you know, I played sports for a while, so my identity would be in basketball. Where I tried dating, and I just felt this kind of longing and desire for something meaningful, but for a long time couldn't name that. Yeah. And obviously I had the benefit of growing up in church, and so it's like in my head, cognitively, I knew the answer, but because I had never experienced Jesus, I had never tangibly walked with Jesus before, that longing was unfulfilled because I wasn't looking for it in the one place that I could find it. And so I think a lot of it was that desire for something meaningful, and maybe that attentiveness to that longing not being fulfilled in many things. And so ultimately, I feel like Jesus had been pursuing me, and been looking back on it and seeing Christ pursuing me and almost sitting there, like you can see a lot through Scripture, almost sitting there and saying, I want to satisfy you and I can satisfy you. And continuing to pursue me, and just kind of eventually growing attentive towards what that looked like and that in the person of Christ. And that was a long process, but he was faithful not to give up on me when I couldn't figure out the answer in my heart as soon as I may have wanted to.
So, you know, and thank you for that. So there's a young man and young woman out there that is a teenager that is saying, okay, you know, I mean, how do I even find Jesus? How do I even believe this? Because, you know, you're not the norm.
Okay. Yeah.
Right?
Right.
You're not the norm. So how did you begin? How, you know, and it was great that you were raised in a Christian family, and that always helps, because that helped me as well. But, you know, I mean, how did you begin to read the Bible and get this hunger to want to understand? Because then you had friends at school that probably saw you as weird.
Yeah, I would say for me, one of the ways that I knew that this was real, and when I was struggling, because for a long time I felt like for a long time I could have characterized myself by this longing and this desire to be intimate with Christ, but couldn't name that.
Yes.
But I knew in my heart that there was this kind of lack of content, contentedness in my heart, and so for a while I knew it had to be true, because there were friends of mine that most of the time were older. You could really tell something different about them, and I knew that they were walking with Christ, and I could see the level of joy and satisfaction in their hearts. And that was a big thing for me, because for a long time, what it felt like was I was trying to, figure it out, or it was too difficult or too complex, or I just couldn't figure out how to, make sense of this relationship with this God that at times felt so abstract. And so part of it for me was seeing people walking with Jesus and seeing how much they loved him. And even though at times I couldn't understand that, I think sometimes that we have to watch somebody love something first before we can really love it ourselves. And that really helped me. I think another thing, for a long time, I saw the Bible as a book of list of rules or things to do and not do. And for a long time, I felt Christianity, the way I lived it out, was be a good person. And that's the true gospel is so contrary to that idea of be a good person, because the gospel says Jesus died for you because you couldn't be a good person on your own merit. And so it was a long process of Jesus really teaching me what the gospel actually was. And it was a long process, but I began to see Christianity and God not as this abstract, almost idea, but as a tangible person. And like grasping that Jesus was human and that the significance of his death for me was huge. One of the coolest things for me that I started to do, it God kind of revealed to me one day, because you've heard oftentimes that gospel translates to good news.
Yes.
And I'd always heard that and I thought, okay, great. But when I really started to read the gospel as good news for me and how it wasn't just writings from so long ago, but that it had remarkable significance for me. That was a huge frame shift when I started. And it's still like when I have my quiet times now, I can read promises of God or characteristics of God's nature. And I can point to that and know that that's really just good news that I can hold on to, and that changes things. And I think a cool thing for me was God actually, and you kind of mentioned it already, but God will mold us and teach us through a lot of our
Yes.
failures.
Yes.
And so through that struggle and longing and desire, like I said, I went to basketball and I quit basketball and then I went to relationships and I kind of got to a point I remember when I really didn't know if I wanted to do this Christianity thing anymore, and because it
Yes.
wasn't working for me and I thought I couldn't be good enough to get to Jesus. And what I was taught was that grace became a real thing for me. And I had heard the idea of grace, but grace didn't become beautiful to me until I accepted it, until I really had no other option, until I really wrestled with my depravity and looked for an answer to that. And what I found in the gospel that I answered that was particularly beautiful to me. And so it was kind of a mesh of those three things, both me being able to be attentive to things and God really revealing himself to me and certain truths that really provided to be frame shifts for me over the last 4 years of high school.
You are such a breath of fresh air. And I could just listen to you talking, and it's almost like you're already ministering as you're explaining this process. So I appreciate, your willingness to come to this show today, honestly,
Yeah.
because then I thought at first that it was going to help just the young, like you, the teenagers, but I'm already sensing that it's going to help, the young and the old at the same time to understand and hopefully build a closer relationship with the Lord, themselves as well in their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of what Dad and I talked about was that the book is definitely for teenagers, but we definitely make the point that sufferings of teenagers and questions of teenagers are not isolated to them. So yeah, you're right, and we're that's our hope with the book and what we teach is that it's not just for a small group of people, but for a lot of people.
Let's talk about this project. I
Yeah.
mean, you're a teenager, and of course, you are a writer because you said you started writing when you were in elementary school, I think.
Yes, yeah, elementary school.
How do you get to begin the love of writing? and expand it.
So it has a kind of a funny beginning. So I remember I had to, it was elementary school, and I believe it was maybe fourth or fifth grade. And I remember our teacher just had us, she just told us to write a story, just any sort of story for class. And I remember one of my favorite basketball players was Allen Iverson. And so I wrote a short story called The Adventures of Me and AI, and that was kind of his nickname. And so I remember just writing that, and then my friend Bradley and I starting writing like really short stories, and my parents would just give me like blank hardback books where I could write in and just fill in the blank pages. And so it started with that. I think for a while I tried to write some sort of Christian music. I know I have some journals with that. Probably not very good. None of it was published, as you can probably imagine, as I was probably six or so. So I started with that. And then as I grew up, I had a sports blog for a long time. Actually, I was a big sports guy, and so from probably age 7 or so till probably 13, a lot of my writing was actually about sports. And so I was naturally around sports a lot, and because of that, I read a lot. And so initially, my writing and my reading was around sports. But naturally, the more and more that I became interested in theology and in talking about and writing about God, that interest of writing and reading was transferred from sports to my faith. And so I ended up starting a blog, I think my freshman or sophomore year of high school, just kind of walking through my faith and what I had been learning. And then it was about my junior year, once I quit basketball, that I really picked up reading an awful lot, and loved some writers like Donald Miller, and Bob Goff. And so it was a long process, starting with like hardback books when I was probably six or seven,
Wow.
and then got to and then eventually culminated in obviously co-authoring a book with my dad. So it's pretty funny to look back and kind of see that progression.
Wow. So you're an entrepreneur as well. So, that's awesome.
Yeah,
That
I guess you could call it that.
is awesome. So, did you initiate writing the book, co-authoring with your dad, or he's the one that came to you and said, "Hey, do you want to co-author a book with me?"
Yeah, so the story goes that so dad actually initiated the idea. So what happened was over the last, it was probably most of my high school years. Dad being a counselor, I think I inherited some desire to be a high school shrink myself. And so I really like dad, I really enjoyed listening. And so I had that opportunity, and God definitely gave me that heart for listening and hearing people's stories in high school. And that was hard for me sometimes because there was a lot of messy stuff and a lot of discouraging stuff. And so what I would do oftentimes is I would come back from school and talk with dad about, what I'd seen or what I'd heard or what I'd experienced myself even. And I guess that culminated a lot over time. And that definitely had both a profound impact on me, but I think also my dad. And I remember my dad coming to me actually and talked about, well, what if we did a teen edition? And, being a 18-year-old kid, who didn't really think of having any aspirations of writing a book, I thought, well, that would be crazy. What an awesome idea. What if that happened? And then over time, it became a pretty serious idea. And then once we got the rights reverted back to us, it was actually happening. And there were definitely times throughout the writing of the book where I thought, is this really happening? I had to kind of remind myself. So yeah, it definitely was a culmination of a few years of kind of our conversations, and then dad finally had the grand idea of it all.
So did you have like a survey that you asked, I mean, like the young people, the teenagers, does your life suck?
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com to get all the latest. Download our new apps and be part of the most informed audience in broadcast. Well, I'm not a vitamin kind of guy, but I also discovered playing hero with your health doesn't work either. I found myself in the hospital, working long hours. Had trouble sleeping, low energy even. Well, I knew something had to change. Well, then someone sent me a product called Healthy Cell Pro and told me to take it for 30 days. I figured, what do I got to lose? 3 weeks into a one-month supply, the results blew me away. More restful sleep, a sharper focus, even more energy. That's even from Malcolm Out Loud, that is. Nobel Prize nominee inventor Dr. Vincent Giampapa. He explains it this way. It works by infusing your cells with over 60 plant-derived phytonutrients that target the building block of your body, the cell. I liked it so much, I asked the company for a special deal for you. Instead of $110 plus shipping, you get it for just $79.99 for the monthly plan, plus free shipping. Just go to healthycell.com, use the limited time offer code OUTLOUD.
Like a survey that you ask, you know, I mean, like the young people, the teenagers, does your life suck?
So we didn't do that, but it was more of what Dad definitely had kind of heard some of that dialogue, and a lot of it was based off of me and Dad sat down pretty early on and discussed specifically what we had heard and why we thought that we had heard those things. And so it wasn't so much of it. It was a lot more informal than it was formal. Okay. So a lot of it was just kind of both our observations and the conversations that we had had, and a lot of my conversations that I'd had with kids in school, and just a lot of offhand remarks almost of, you know, my job sucks or school sucks, and just hearing that constant flow of negativity. You could kind of tell how people perceived their quality of life to be, and so that's kind of how we kind of acquired that.
So I'm thinking, right, that your dad wouldn't have missed a moment to compare his childhood or teenage years or those times with the times today, with the teenagers today. And if there were moments like that, do you remember what some of the differences were that he would say, well, back in the days, we didn't have to do this, or the kids didn't say this? I'm sure that came up.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there were a lot of those things. And Dad definitely agrees with the notion that being a kid today is probably a lot harder than it was. And a part of that is due to I think social media. Dad and I kind of talked about that, and there's a lot of pressure to perform there, and that there's a lot of bullying that goes on there, but also a lot of self-bullying that can come from that. So he talked a lot about just how connected we are, and not, you know, making social media the reason why things are bad, but how that can be used, and that pressure, and how people are so much more connected, but also so much more exposed than they've ever been before. Is definitely one aspect of it. Dad definitely talked about the issue of schools being even more difficult. We would, you know, kind of just have dialogue about just the pressures that academics put on students, both you know, mentally, emotionally, and kind of how that made it a little more difficult today. Mm-hmm. And he just had, in a general sense, he just felt that there was a lot more pressure. That's kind of the word that we kept coming back to, is there's just a lot of pressure for people and teenagers to perform and do well in a lot of different areas, in a way that pressure didn't exist as much when my dad was a kid, he would say.
And you know what, I like the fact that you yourself as a teenager, you know, I mean, does acknowledge that it's not easy being a teenager today, because a lot of parents, I don't think they are acknowledging and embracing that, you know what, as much as you want these teenagers to do well, what they're faced with is way more than what, you know, I mean, adults face back in the days.
It's difficult, because then you lack that understanding, and what the typical teenager will say, at least what I've heard a lot, is nobody understands me, or nobody gets it, or especially my parents don't get it. Yeah. And that lack of feeling like, okay, someone understands me and validates what I'm feeling, is difficult to cope with. And that's part of why Dad and I wanted to write this, was to validate that teenager who had either wrestled with some questions or felt these ways, and they could at least point to something and say, okay, what I'm feeling is valid.
Yeah. How did this strengthen your relationship with your dad?
Yeah. So I think, obviously, Dad and I enjoyed a close relationship even before the book. Yeah. But I think it's really cool, because we both share those passions, both of our faith and also writing. Mm-hmm. But never had we been able to work on a project that incorporated both. And so we got to dialogue and work on both our love of writing itself, but also our love of Christ and what that meant for us. And that was really cool to be able to dialogue with him in an informal way, but working towards a project. And I think that creates a bond, and it's definitely one of the more meaningful things, if not the most meaningful thing, that I got to do. And I definitely got to learn a lot about my dad too, because obviously, if you read the book, it definitely has some of my dad's experiences within the book. And I'll be honest, there were some things that I read in the book, like not even us talking, but just things I read while that he had written that I didn't know about him, and I learned about him. And so I think for both of us, part of the growth that came from our relationship was the things that I learned about him through his writing.
Yes.
And I think for him as well, he got to come to a greater understanding of me through reading what I had written and kind of being vulnerable in that sense.
And you know what? What I like about it, because he did send me a copy of the book, and I highly recommend it, especially for parents that are starting or wanting to talk about faith and building their own faith as well as their children's faith, because it's almost like it's a bridging the gap book that bridges the gap between, the adult's way of looking at life and, dealing with when life, when they think their life sucks, and when a teenager thinks, my life sucks. But having that bridging the gap and exploring the life of Paul. So, were there any difficulties that you faced, challenges as far as when you guys wrote this, I wonder.
Yeah, definitely. For me anyways, one probably not so much as for dad, but definitely for me, one challenge I faced was because I was just I mean, it worked out perfectly, but because I was just writing the introductions, I had the temptation to write to impress, or because I was also young, to validate that I could write and almost to prove myself instead of writing what God wanted me to write. And what that looks like is I think some of the best. I love my dad's writing style because it's pretty simple. It's right at you, and you get it and grasp it, and that's what I want my writing to be too. But part of during the writing was that selfishness that'll come up, and making the book about me or about my ability to perform or impress or like I don't know, maybe validate like oh, it's an 18-year-old kid writing. I need to impress and show people that I have an idea of what I'm doing. And so it was battling that a lot in the writing process. And to be honest, the writing process took a little bit longer than we probably would have thought it would, because at the very beginning of the process, I was going through a lot spiritually, and I honestly wasn't in a really good place. And I didn't want to write out of when I wasn't feeling inspired or that I believed what I was writing. And so part of it was my own spiritual ups and downs throughout the actual writing process that either left me inspired or discouraged, or sometimes Satan would kind of get at me and kind of whisper doubts of you're only 18, or you don't know what you're doing, or you've never written a book before. And so a lot of those doubts and trying to battle that and continue to kind of persevere through that. Those were definitely some personal challenges that I faced throughout the writing of the book.
I am continuing to read the book. I read it one time, and then now I'm going back again and rereading it. I must commend both of you. It's really in depth, and because then, for me, I'm also learning about, Paul in a different, way, looking at the book of Paul from a whole different aspect. So, I commend you because, yes, it is nice, simple, and easy to understand. That's what I like about it. And with a title like When Will My Life Not Suck? I mean, who wouldn't want
Yeah,
to pick
we definitely talked about the title, and it's fun. We always, whenever somebody asks us what the title of the book is, Dad and I either look at each other or definitely smile or laugh as we tell them the title.
Did he come up with that?
Yeah, definitely. Dad definitely did, because Dad had written obviously the original edition with that title, and then we just had the teen edition of this. But yeah, Dad had fun with that, and we definitely didn't want to shy away from filtering down the message of the book, so we kept it.
And I really like you say, the way your dad writes, and I think what was surprising when I interviewed him was the way that he also has this funny side, a funny bone in him.
That is hilarious. I don't even say this because he's my father, and I don't even want to. I'm not even trying to flatter him, but Dad is one of the funniest guys that you'll
Right?
ever meet. And so it's so fun because being with him in one conversation, I can feel listened to and inspired and enlightened, and at the same time, be rolling on the floor laughing. And I don't even mean that in a cheesy way. Like, he really has both sides to him. And as a counselor, I think that's perfect because he's able to have that funny side and not take life too seriously, but at the same time, look at life very seriously and answer those hard questions. So it's a balance that really comes out both in his writing and in his ability to write. And obviously, there's a lot of like there's one I think there's one chapter in the book that there's rat poop in my corn dog. I think that's one of the I think that may be chapter 13. And so that's Dad's humor. And it's definitely injected throughout the book, and which is nice because it's definitely dealing with a serious topic, but he uses humor in a way that's fun.
It, very clean humor as well,
Yeah,
and I,
definitely.
yeah, I like that about him. And he's not only a pastor. A therapist, a counselor. He's also a pastor, right? Isn't he a minister of the gospel as well?
Yeah, so for a while he worked, so he's not doing that anymore, but for a long time, he was a minister. He was at a church in where we were living in Greenville, South Carolina, and then he helped do ministry at Brentwood Baptist, where we were at for quite a while. He was helping with kind of the singles ministry here at Brentwood. So yeah, he's definitely done that, as well as writing, as well as now being a marriage counselor full time. So he's definitely a jack of all trades, and it's funny that I'm interested in ministry, in counseling, and writing. So the apple definitely doesn't fall too far from the tree.
Yeah, you are truly a mini me.
Yeah, and I don't mind that at all. That'd be huge. That like a blend of him and mom, because they're both really wonderful.
Oh, that's awesome. So now you're finishing your first year as a freshman.
Yes.
Have you found ways and means that you're going to continue, ministry in college?
Yeah, so I'm definitely a cool thing that I've experienced my freshman year here is that I've been poured into a lot. I think part of what I lacked maybe in high school is I didn't seek out people that would disciple me very well. And that wasn't people's fault, that was my fault, that I just didn't realize how important it was for people to speak into my life. And so freshman year is the temptation has been for me just to sit and enjoy being discipled. Through like I'm in a campus ministry. I found a church here in Nashville. So the temptation has been, let me just sit here and be discipled and enjoy that. But what I've been reminded of pretty consistently throughout my freshman year is that I'm being discipled so that I can disciple people. That's the whole, point of the process is I'm learning and being built up and being taught so that I can go teach. So yeah, it's been really cool. I definitely have good relationships with the guys on my floor. I mean, I think college is a really unique opportunity because I'm living with people, and it's not this separate school and then I go home, but there's a hour by hour opportunity. And so it's been a lot. I mean, I've had conversations with my suite mates and a lot of guys on my floor. I'm involved in a Bible study with a lot of other freshmen, and I'm hoping to get involved with some homeless ministries as well, trying to kind of use God's heart or God's kind of put that on my heart, and so I want to be able to use that too. So definitely, it's been a really refreshing time of being encouraged, and then just making sure that I don't stay content with being encouraged, but also knowing that I'm encouraged to be an encourager, and I'm loved to go love. And so it's definitely been that temptation's been there, but God's definitely, I guess for the last month especially, kind of been revealing ways that He wants to use me here.
I love the way that you just say, did you know that one of my tagline, actually that is my tagline, is be encouraged and encouraging.
Oh, that's perfect then. Oh,
And
man.
here you are, you just said it like, and I just say it, because before we started, the session, and like I always do, I always, pray and call upon the Holy Spirit so that, the interviews are led, that way we get to feel and sense His presence in all the interviews that I do. That's my prayer all the time. So with that, with what you just said now, it was just like a confirmation. And I know I just looked up in heaven and said, okay, God, that. I know you're here.
I see what you're doing.
You see, right? Like, okay, I feel your presence because he just mentioned encouraging like 2, 3, 4 times. So isn't that amazing?
That's incredible. Yeah, that connection. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I had no idea that was any part of your tagline. That's really
Yeah. So if you search me and those that what I do is on Facebook, right? I always post a dose of encouragement, you know, and sometimes a dose of motivation and encouragement. But at the end of it, I always sign up, be encouraged and encouraging.
Yeah, and both parts. So that's something that I can remind. Yeah, well, that's good because I need that reminder.
Yes.
The both parts, and they're both huge.
Yeah, so that, you know what, when we open our hearts to being encouraged, there's always something, somebody on a daily, minute-by-minute basis that comes along and encourages us. And then we also look out and see how we get used to be encouragers to other people. And it's such an exciting, you know, life, but then it's also a ministry of encouraging others, you see?
And that's exactly the idea of discipleship, is that I'm encouraged so that I go and be an encourager, and then it's almost a domino effect. And that's exactly how it's supposed to be, which I think is and it's the way that we love out of response. Yes. To how we've been loved. And so that way we're not conjuring up or trying to muster up feelings of love for somebody else. We're not trying to do it completely on our own power, but we're responding to the love that God's given us, and God's given us through other people. And then we just get to respond to that. And I think that's a pretty beautiful invitation, rather than this very scary idea of, okay, I've got to muster up and I got to do this and do this, rather than I just need to respond to what I've received.
Yeah, right. I'm very interested in, digging in the book and just, calling on you to probably expand a little bit. I opened on chapter 4, right, which says Garden Club of Warriors. Mm-hmm. And you start off by saying, we call it base, brothers applying spiritual encouragement. Oh, there goes that word encouragement again.
There it is again.
Can you talk a little bit about that, you know, the base?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was one of the most meaningful groups that I've ever been in. So it actually started with me and Jacob Bell, who headed it up, and my friend named Marcus at Starbucks one night. Jacob just texted me and said, hey, let's have a Bible study. And so I texted Marcus. And so it started with three guys, and we just were getting into the Word and just kind of talking and wanting to have that sort of actual sense of fellowship and community.
You are tuned in to the Dr. Stem Show. To reach Dr. Stem or her guest, please email us at drstem@americaoutloud.com. Now, back to Dr. Stem for more support, confidence, and hope.
Actually mention, you know, the whole point of this conversation, whether we like it or not, you said we need other people, which is Proverbs 27, verse 17.
Yeah, that's been one of the best things that I've learned, I think, over the last year, because I think, and part of it may be just American, is that we really want to be very self-reliant. Not only do we not want to, but there's almost this underlying sense that sometimes we don't even want to need God. And I think I talk a little bit about that in the book too, that we need God more than we can possibly want to admit. But recognizing that bits and pieces of who God is are stored in each and every person explodes with the opportunity and the possibility for us to encounter God more fully and more fully with each person we meet. And especially with teenagers, I really think feeling isolated, or if they're in relationships, their relationships that really aren't particularly meaningful or encouraging. But God offers in Scripture this image of the church, mm-hmm. being one that shares everything and carries one another's burdens. And I think that that's been hugely impactful for me. And obviously, our walk with Christ is a one-on-one walk, but it is very difficult, if not impossible, to do alone. And I think we'd do well to recognize that and then act on that.
You know what? You make it sound so easy for one, but you know, unlike other people that try to talk to teenagers or to even adults on how you know faith and your belief in God and Jesus Christ, you know, is helpful in a way to travel this journey called life. I think, you know, just talking to you today, and I hope the listeners are hearing the same thing that I'm hearing, that, you know, you make it such a pleasurable thing that somebody can open up and say, you know what, I want to know what, you know, this whole thing about, you know, grace is all about Jesus, about, you know, following your heart and having, you know, to serve him, what that's all about. And I think, you know, there's no other person that, you know, probably could do it better than you. So I like that, your approach to it, you know?
Yeah, because then that's a freeing way of looking at it too, because we can be terrified sometimes of either awkwardness or having to, like, we can almost like scare ourselves into not sharing the gospel. Yes. But something helpful for me has been seeing the gospel as good news and seeing it as a story filled with good news. And when I think about that, I almost thought about it as like my favorite book or my favorite movie, in the sense that when you read it or see it and you love it so much, so you just want to go tell people and it's not scary. And in the same way, I've tried to remind my heart that the gospel is a story, a historical story that happened, and that's remarkably significant for everyone. And not only is it significant for everyone, but people need to hear it, and it changes people. And I think that's been really helpful to kind of see it as a story, and just how incredibly good it is, and how, like, for me anyways, one reason why I think I believe Jesus as a trustworthy source is I don't think any human mind could have created the gospel, because I think the gospel is too good not to be true. And that's been really helpful in terms of being able to just have those conversations and have that dialogue, as scary as it might be early on.
So your dad, right? He writes in one of those paragraphs and he says, "My impression is that teenage girls, you know, tell each other everything, while teenage guys may not be quite transparent and vocal in this generation." How true is that?
Yeah, I think he's pretty spot on. it definitely, you obviously don't want to generalize it entirely, but I think in general, guys have this idea that guys do things together, that guys hang out, and that's the way that we're intimate. And it's almost weird. It almost feels unnatural or uncomfortable, possibly because of the expectations that we have for guys not to have that conversation, that communication. But I know that, like, the closest guy friends that I have are the ones that I can sit down with and grab coffee with and really talk about what's going on in faith. And so I think part of it is we need to maybe reframe our expectations for what guys' friendship should look like, because you typically think, okay, the girls are really close to talk and the guys just, you know, hang out and do things together, but we're missing out on a lot of meaning if we don't have that. And so I think a lot of it is pushing past what might feel uncomfortable at first.
You're right. I just want to read probably a couple paragraphs, you know, from this book, why I think and highly recommend it. It's one of those introductions, because you wrote in an introduction to each of the chapters in the book, and, you know, very well written. But a lot of people have these misconceptions about teenagers today, and to the extent that a lot of people will say, we don't understand them just as much as the teenagers say nobody understands us, it becomes true, right? Yeah. But you wrote, "My generation is one of great loneliness, which is terribly dangerous, considering that loneliness and isolation is often a root of depression. We shut those out who are different than us or are in different friendship groups. We are told to trust no one and frequently tell ourselves that we are all we need." And I'll just stop there, because that it just grasped me when I read that chapter, and I thought, wow, you know, unlike what we see and what we hear as well, most people would not even think that it is a generation of great loneliness.
Yeah, because the idea is that, as I've said, we're so connected and so exposed through all the different ways that we're able to now. People think that, oh, I'm around people all the time, or I'm constantly stimulated by something. But it's some of this paradox that I think we're probably the most overly stimulated generation of all time, and we're also probably one of the most lonely generations. And I think what it comes down to is we've settled for very fringe level friendships. So what I mean by that, and I've experienced this, is we know a lot of people okay and decently well, but we know very few people at a deep, intimate level. And I think part of that is we're afraid of what that would look like, because to know somebody deeply is going to require that I have to show a lot of myself. And I think we're afraid of that vulnerability and afraid of what will happen if I show my true self, if I am really vulnerable, and would people still love me if they knew what I've been through or what I've done? And I think we're afraid of that. And I think the grace of God definitely speaks into that. But the hard thing is, God definitely can reach people that are lonely, but God definitely speaks through people. And so people that are isolated or feel that sense of aloneness, it's much more difficult for them to experience God. And I think that's something that's sad, and that's something that definitely has a fix. But it's up to us, I think, as believers, because I've definitely felt that even in my first semester here at Belmont. I mean, I had people that I spoke to, but I didn't really know anybody really well. And I think one of the longings that God's put in our hearts is a desire for deeper and deeper intimacy with other people and that deep sense of community. And I think for us as believers, I mean, I felt that. And so now what God's put on my heart is I want to be able to eradicate that loneliness. And that can feel like a really terrifying thing to try to tackle. But if we just view it as one person, if we just look for the need and have an attentiveness to that need, and we're not blind to the fact that people are lonely, if we all as believers can accept that calling that we have to bring people into the fold of community, then it becomes a lot less terrifying task.
So, I mean, thank you for that as well. So, do you think, and probably this is generalization as well, do you think that the churches today are embracing of and welcoming per se of teenagers especially, and encouraging them to be more involved and to come in and luring them to want to be a part, of the church?
I think maybe both spectrums. I do think the church recently has definitely tried to reach our generation. But I think one problem that the church faces is that we as a generation, our teenagers are very quick to call out anything that feels phony or fake or cheesy or like we've heard it all before. And so what I'm not trying to say is, okay, churches need to just, throw away the script and do something new. But you can do ministry creatively in a way that doesn't feel
Churchy.
routine or churchy, right? In a way that it can just be real people and just a, and I think that's part of why people stay away from the church is that it feels so formal and it can feel kind of phony and it can feel cheesy. And I think another thing that happens is I think there's a tendency for the church to, because they're trying to speak to teenagers, to water down the gospel too much. And try to make it so simple that it becomes too simplified and the gospel loses its complexity. And I don't think that the church needs to do that. And I think probably the last issue that the church probably faces is, and this is just my experience and others I know in youth ministry, churches will really try to engage the hearts of teenagers. And that's awesome. And that's not wrong. But churches also need to engage the intellect and in the mind, because the more I know about God and the more I think about God, the more I'm going to love God. But if I'm just drilled to love God and love God and love God, but I have no reasons or changes in my mind, that's going to be a very temporary thing. And emotion is really fickle, especially at this age. And so I think having a church that engages both the heart and the intellect is really important.
It's almost like, we now need 15, 18-year-olds starting their own churches that, you guys can lead your own flock.
Yeah, just yeah. It would help. And I think one thing that I know, like some churches that I've been a part of have done is they'll have like a student leadership team
Yes.
so that they'll have students that are interacting with pastors. But yeah, because there's a tendency to probably over exaggerate the divide between church and teenagers. But I think it's smaller than it probably seems, but there are definitely strategies that the church probably needs to implement in order to be able to more effectively probably reach our generation.
And you give a great insight and also suggestions on how to improve that, and that's really, really awesome. Wow, look at the time. It's just like, time is just going by so fast. If we were to give a message to your parents, can you talk to me about three things that they have taught you?
I think the first thing, both through their professions and how they've loved me, is that life is not about me. As much as I try to remember that, I know that sometimes I'll fail in that. My parents have definitely taught me that it's not about me. And I learned that through mission trips and other experiences, yes. But my parents have been really incredibly selfless, and that's been modeled in their jobs. That's been modeled in their marriage, and that's been modeled in how they parent. And I've seen that and been reminded that a life of joy is one that's a life of service. And they've modeled that pretty well. I think another thing that they've definitely taught me is that search for meaning. That both my parents have a very meaningful marriage, and they have meaningful relationships with their sons. And they enjoy their jobs, and I think that's a big part of it for me, is seeing them doing meaningful things throughout their day and just filling their lives with things of substance. Like I don't see my parents kind of exude the in the world, not of it. And that's been really cool to see modeled for me. And I guess the last thing that my parents have taught me is that God's going to walk with me through anything. And constantly, my parents have been an encouragement to me when I've gone through various trials that that God dwells within me and walks with me. And regardless of my emotions or how I might feel about that, I know in my head that the truth of the gospel is that my God does not abandon me. And my parents have been able to point me back to times that God has walked me through things and God has provided for me. And that's allowed me to trust my present and have hope in my future that He'll do the same.
I also wanted you just for a bit to expand on grace, the meaning of grace, because you exude grace in just the way you speak, the way you're so composed. And I wonder, if you can help the audience, the listeners out there, just to understand in a few words the importance of grace in one's life.
I think, and this is one of the coolest things that I've learned. What shame does and what guilt does is that it paralyzes us and it doesn't allow us to move or do anything. And what shame does is tells us you did something bad, and because of that, that's who you are. Whereas what conviction is conviction is this is what you've done. Let's help you lead you to repentance. And so often, I think people have a hard time reconciling the grace of God and conviction, but they're definitely intertwined in the sense that because God has been graceful, we have the opportunity to live a repentful lifestyle, and I think that's really incredible. And I think for me, a reminder that it's not based on my merit or my ability to perform, because I have a tendency to try to perform for people, and perform for God. But grace, what grace tells me is that my failures are not fatal and they're not final. And that doesn't give me the license to just live however I want to live or live apathetically. But grace tells me that my efforts and my heart is what matters to God, but that it's not based on, God's not given me a standard that I have to reach, but Christ on the cross has died and has reached that standard in full. And so now I have a freedom, and that's what I think grace gives, is that it takes away shame and guilt and allows us to have freedom to live and to move and to love God. And grace is a cool thing, because you can look at the person of Jesus, and Jesus is grace. And I think that that's helpful to look at, just the life of Jesus and the person of Jesus, tangible representation of what grace is.
I now see, or maybe I can now understand why your dad, sounded like, and I think he did tear up talking about you. You're such a pleasure to talk to, and I can see how proud and why he would be so proud to be your dad. So you know what? Keep that young heart
Yes,
with
ma'am. I
you.
appreciate it so much. Thank you for saying that. I really enjoyed today. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it was really a pleasure interviewing you. And for the audience out there today, I was speaking to a young author who hasn't even started his work yet, because I can see and envision many more books that are going to come out of Cameron Preston. I can see it.
I
This
sure hope. I hope you're right.
Oh no, I know I am right. This ministry is just beginning. So, I don't be surprised if I reach out to you again and come up with a different topic and have you as my guest again, so that we can talk to young people out there, because they're hungry to hear about the word. They're hungry to know what direction they can take and how to deal with some of these difficult challenges and places, people that they face on a day-to-day basis. So I think as we do that, talk to the young people and the adults, we too will have fulfilled our mission that, God has called us to do here on earth, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And you know what? Let me end up by reading just a few words from your dad, and because then I like the way that he says, we don't always have a lot of control over our circumstances. Nobody purposely chooses financial ruin or chronic illness, but we can choose to nurture relationships. We were created for relationship with God and relationship with one another. So I urge everyone that will listen to this to buy the book, When Will My Life Not Suck? And get more information and in-depth knowledge on how you can authentically deal with some of these problems that we are facing now. Until then, thank you for listening to the Dr. Stem Show. And as I always say, be encouraged and encouraging.